There is an abundance of parenting advice out there. Organic meals, unstructured play, and of course, little to no screen time are some of the go-to tips. How can working parents manage the cacophony of expert voices? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about parenting under time and budget constraints and how to make screen limits really work for you are Beach Acres Parenting Center President Laura Mitchell. Welcome back, Laura.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And New York Times Wirecutter writer Ellen Lee. Thanks for being here, Ellen.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Laura, there is this long tradition of parenting advice I'm thinking about from Dr. Spock all the way to the present, but are parents bombarded with advice now more than ever, do you think?
I think that parents have access to advice more than ever with social media and AI. And so there's just a variety of places that parents can go to get information and a lot of resources that are out there. And I do think that there are some themes that you can think of when you're looking at parenting advice to actually judge whether or not this fits for you and your family.
Ah, what are those themes you should look at?
So I think that, first of all, when you're looking at all of the information that's out there for parents in terms of advice, is to really think about your parenting values. Think about what type of adult you want to raise as you're raising your children, and then what matters most to you and your family, and what currently meets your child's needs at the moment. And so those are three things I think of that parents can really look at when you're considering resources.
Okay. Well, Ellen, I know one piece of advice we've been hearing for years is to limit screen time for children, especially young children. Are there apps that can help with that?
So the good news is that there are a lot of apps. There's a lot of technology out there to help you. And the challenge is there are a lot of different apps and technology out there to help you. And there's the basic stuff. Your iPhone or your Android phone both have screen time controls that parents can use, and they're absolutely free. But then the challenge is that every single platform also has their own parental controls. So YouTube has something, Netflix has something, Instagram has something. And so it can be a challenge for parents because you're kind of like an IT person juggling all the different platforms.
And I know I am not an IT person. Everybody who works with me can testify to that. Well, Ellen, I know a big struggle for parents is children secretly using phones at bedtime and losing sleep. How do the apps you wrote about deal with that?
So you can use apps to turn on, you can block the phone basically from access so that kids can't get on, and you can make it so that they can still get, say, emergency phone calls. But you can block, say, social media or, you know, their favorite games. But the advice that we got from experts is the biggest way to do it is to just charge your phone outside the bedroom. So it's just not, it might not ding or notify you or just be tempting if it's in your room to like check it in late at night.
Ellen, are these parental control apps difficult to use? How tough are they for parents to figure out?
I think they're trying their best to make it easier. I know that Apple is rolling out new screen time controls this fall, so any minute now. And they are trying to make it easier, but it's just so hard. There are just so many different pieces because you're trying to manage, say, their apps, you're trying to manage privacy, and there's just a lot of tools that you need to, a lot of features that you need to pay attention to. I think the key thing is it just takes a little bit of time. I think they are trying to make it easier, but it is very much a challenge.
We're talking about the realities of parenting under time and budget constraints and how to make advice like screen limits really work for you. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Laura, it feels like limiting screen time can be easier recommended than done, especially for parents with limited time and resources. How big a challenge can that be?
You know, I think that it can be a challenge, but I also think that there are resources for families out there. It takes awareness. And so when I think about limiting screen time, it's replacing it with what? And so as we think about at BJCR's screen time and giving advice to parents, we really focus on connection over consumption. And so we want parents to figure out ways to be able to show love and attention to their children, to have positive conversations, whether that's on the ride to school, over a snack, during dinner. Just find simple ways to connect with your child literally on a daily basis and replace that need to have to go for them to go to their laptop or their iPad or the phone. Simple activities that can be done outside, inside, things that stimulate their creativity and allow them to really lean into their strengths, not only as a child, but also as a parent.
Yeah. It seems like that replacing the screen time with something else is so important because kids can get bored. You just can't keep yelling at them, put the screen down without something else for them to do, right? Well, but is this ever a case where parents sometimes just feel like they need to do what they have to do to get through the day, to get a nervous kid or an anxious kid through the grocery store or have a few minutes to get dinner on the table? I mean, those are some of the times that parents will say, okay, you get 10 minutes on this screen just so that I can get something done.
Absolutely. And that's real in terms of what it takes to be a parent today. And so I think that there are ways that parents can obviously be selective with what their children are looking at when they're on their screen. So that could be an educational program, or it could be a program that stimulates them their creativity. And so just being mindful and aware and intentional of what they are looking at when you do allow them to have that screen time is important.
Yeah. Are there challenges with that, though, too? Because as a busy parent, like, do you have time to curate exactly what's okay to watch and what's not okay? I'm not trying to set you up here with these questions, but I'm remembering when my children were little, and thank goodness there weren't smartphones with screens on them back then, but it's a lot to juggle when you're managing little kids.
It is. And so it does take a little time in terms of the parent actually looking at for a couple of minutes what the child is actually viewing. It's important to look at the research behind the program. And I know that seems like a lot of work to do, but it really is important for parents to know what their child is being exposed to, the lessons that are being learned, the language development that's taking place, and so the words that are being used. And so it's important for the parent to at least get a bird's eye view as to what the child is being exposed to.
Yeah. Laura, are we seeing a disparity with parenting where if you have enough disposable income, you can pay for services that you need to follow some of these parenting recommendations? You can have a nanny who can play with your kid and keep them off the screens, or you can send them to some camp or classes or something. But for parents without that disposable income, they can be struggling to keep kids off these devices. Are you seeing a disparity there? And what does BJCR's recommend when it comes to that?
Yeah, so there can definitely be a disparity. I will say that having access to resources and money, it offers you more options, more freedom and more liberties. There are things that parents who are working two jobs, who don't have that disposable income, actually can do. For example, there are a lot of things right within Cincinnati. So there are the parks to go to. There are all kinds of free programs at the library. The art museum is completely free and has an entire huge area for kids to be able to learn and explore. So does the Contemporary Art Museum. ArtsWave, they have all types of really engaging programs. Findlay Market has cultural programs for kids that are free, as well as Washington Park. So I think that it takes a parent who is informed and in some instances has the transportation, but there are a lot of resources, community resources, to allow your child to do interesting, fun things that stimulate their strengths, their creativity, that doesn't require a parent to have a lot of money, but they do have to be informed. There are a lot of faith-based organizations, as well as, you know, churches that offer programming. And so, I would encourage parents to explore those things. They are out there. In terms of your family member, your parent who's working two jobs and it's really hard to make ends meet, then it requires, quite honestly, going back to creating a village of people who can help you be able to raise your child and to be able to give your child those rich experiences that don't necessarily cost any money. A lot of research is really centered around positive experiences for kids that don't have to cost money, that can be done in the neighborhood, at home, and throughout your community.
Yeah. Ellen, I want to talk to you some more about screens. You mentioned that all these different platforms have parental controls, and I think you mentioned YouTube. We've talked on this program before about how unmonitored YouTube watching can be very unsafe for children, that these YouTube shorts provide endless scrolling. What have you found in your work, Ellen, about the risk of that for children and the importance of using those parental controls for YouTube or just having like a policy related to YouTube in the household?
I'll say I have a 10-year-old, and this is a constant struggle in my own family, because you have YouTube on your TV, on your iPad, and you can do different things. So YouTube itself, if you use YouTube Kids, for instance, that will have some parental controls built in that you can leverage. You can also use your router in your home to help manage access. You can put on passwords. There are tools there, but I keep going back to the fact that it's like a constant juggle. But I really love the advice of having a community, because I do believe ultimately that it's a collective problem, but it comes with, like, there's a collective solution, right? So if your kid is the only one not watching YouTube, that can be a struggle. But if all the kids in his family or his friends or his school have limited access, then that makes it a lot easier, not just for you, but for everyone in your community.
Ellen, do you feel like we can trust YouTube Kids to do the monitoring for us? Are there ever problems with that?
No, I don't. I think that there is still a lot of help that we need to see. I think we still need to see the tech companies step up. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I do think that they are making an effort, but I think they need to make more of an effort. I think that there are ways to, they are making steps, for instance, to like limit shorts for kids. But I think that there are ways to manage the algorithm for kids of different ages, for instance. There are ways to use AI, I think, hopefully, to filter the content. I hear all the time about parents who are like, I put on YouTube Kids and then suddenly this very graphic, problematic video popped up when my kid was supposed to be watching Dora the Explorer. So I feel like I hear that so often that I do know that there needs to be better technology out there.
Laura, both you and Ellen have talked about this idea of a village. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. We've all heard that for so many years. How reasonable is it to expect families to create that village if they don't have family nearby to help, if the grandparents aren't nearby or the aunts and uncles? Like, it seems like even in our neighborhoods, we're not as connected to the people we live near as much as maybe we were, you know, 40 years ago.
Yes, I definitely see that. I think that the village has to expand beyond relatives to include friends and neighbors that you trust, other organizations within the community, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Boys and Girls Club. And so there are a lot of different organizations to connect with, as well as people who might be living right next door to you. But it is important for us to create that sense of community, especially for family members who don't have relatives living near them.
Yeah. Ellen, personal question for you. You said you have a 10-year-old. Do you have a village that you can lean on?
We are definitely trying. Our school has a lot of active parents. We have a group chat, so we are using technology to manage technology. But there is a definite effort to, you know, create independence for our kids so they can go out on their own and know that their friends might be at the park to join them. I think there is currently, we started school last week, and the first thing that happened was the kids decided to start a big group chat. And so I think there's a discussion right now among the parents. How do we manage this? How do we work with our teachers also, who are also aware of this, to keep an eye on it? Like, we don't want to stifle their their connections, but we also want to coach them and help them and teach them about how to best talk to each other and not say bully each other or spam each other and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Laura, that's a challenge, isn't it?
It is. And I will say that at Beach Acres, through our parent coaching, we create villages of parents who can come together and meet and talk and have that communion about issues or challenges that they're facing and they're working through with one another. And so our parent coaching through our Parent Connects is another way to create that village.
Yeah. How do you talk more? Can you talk more about, Laura, how to instill those ethical values in kids and really make sure that they're communicating with each other, especially when your village might have parents in it with different parenting styles than yours?
Sure. So it is very important to connect with people who value the same types of things that you value for your family. We believe in Beach Acres around centering our work around the emotional well-being of kids. And so we really work on them being able to refine their self-awareness, their social awareness, good decision-making, building healthy relationships, and finding their own voice. And so those are the things that we really encourage families and parents, as well as schools, to lean into to really create kids who are healthy and who are moving to wellness and thriving.
Mm-hmm. Is part of it, too, helping parents understand how they want to model behaviors and actions and for their kids?
Absolutely. Especially when you're talking about screen time. Kids are constantly watching everything that you do. And so if you say limit your screen time, but then the child sees mom or dad on their phone all the time, it doesn't send the right message. Very quickly, I used to work with someone who had a three-year-old, and the three-year-old was doing something that she wasn't supposed to do. And the mom said, stop doing that. And the three-year-old said, you don't tell me, just look at your phone.
Ooh.
So she was used to mom constantly looking at her phone. And so absolutely modeling the behavior that you want to see out of your kids, especially when it comes to screen time, is vitally important.
Yeah. Well, and when you do have your child's going, it gets to the age where they're going to a friend's house, is the deal that you need to follow the house rules, even if a parent has different rules at their house than maybe at the house where you live all the time? Is that a good idea to just follow the rules wherever you are?
I wouldn't blanketly say follow the rules because, again, people have very different values. And I think it's about instilling the values in your child so that you feel that when your child is away from you, that they are going to still demonstrate those values. And if they find themselves in a situation that's uncomfortable, that's not in alignment with your family values, that they will remove themselves from that, whether that means calling you to come and pick them up. But that's really important to instill your values and to hold those as sacred, even when going into someone else's home, not to the point that you would offend them, but to remove yourself if it's something that you're not comfortable with as a child.
Okay. Well, fascinating. Well, Ellen, any other shortcut tech tips you can give in the last 30 seconds or so to help out parents there who are hearing all this and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm drowning?
I think it's to reiterate that it's a constant. It's so many conversations. And really the relationship between the parent and the child is key. And then the relationship between the child and all his community is also key.
Yeah. Yeah, with our kids, we always said, just tell us anything. You know, it's the cover-up that's the problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this has been fascinating. I have been talking with Beach Acres Parenting Center President Laura Mitchell and New York Times Wirecutter writer Ellen Lee. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to tune in tomorrow for our weekly news review. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.